Joining us on the line from Israel is Rolene Marks. Rolene, how are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thanks, and you? Super strong. Strong like buffalo, as we say.
Strong like a buffalo. All right, so we just were chatting. In fact, it's quite interesting because we might as well start off on this conversation. We were chatting to Tanya Currie, and we were doing the news in numbers, mainly focusing on South Africa. But a couple of listeners asked her to look into John Cusack and how he trended around the world. You know, sometimes we all live in our own social media and news bubble. So I'm fully aware that a story that could be very big amongst people who are either sensitively, you know, either Jewish or sensitive to Jewish issues or Israel issues. You know, we sometimes think that a story is bigger than it is because it circulates around our own pages, but which is why I asked her as well to look into that story. Turns out it was a massive, massive story on social media, and the net sentiment was extremely negative around John Cusack. Have we heard anything further following his ridiculous tweets and defense of it, saying it was a bot, etc.?
Well, you know, it must be those terrible Zionist bots, because the bots made him do it. I don't know what's half-baked, John Cusack or his apology. You know, I'm under the impression today that if you want to do something meaningful with your apology, you actually need to get it off your seater, because you can't say other words on family-friendly radio. Uh-huh. And he needs to go and educate himself. First of all, it's very easy to opine on the situation in the Middle East from a continent away when you're not living the daily reality and you're not understanding the nuances. It seems to be something trendy, so he's just going to jump in. And then have this bizarre apology that he thought he was standing up for Palestinian justice, but that he doesn't have an anti-Semitic bone in his body. Well, John, if you're listening, because you might be, how would you never know?
You know, I'm sure he would be. You know, why wouldn't he, actually?
Exactly. Dear John, if you're listening, dear John, you haven't clarified.
I think that's enough. We could just start with dear John, because that says it all.
Dear John, you haven't clarified your follow the money statement. He's half-baked apologized for the image, not realizing where it came from, and he blamed it on the bots, and he blamed it on the this, and he blamed it on the that. But the vile anti-Semitic trope, which of course he hadn't learned from Ilhan Omar, and the fallout that a comment about money is going to have, he hasn't seemed to have learned from that. I want him to clarify that, and I want him to get off his bottom, his booty, his tush, and come to Israel, to the Middle East, and meet with people from various walks of life on both sides. And then I also want him to go and visit a place like Yad Vashem and a place like Auschwitz, to understand the veracity of and the irresponsibility and the power of images and words. And while he's at it, he can take Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with him, because she also needs to be edumacated.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just talk about that for anybody who doesn't know that story. What happened with her this week?
Okay, so Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and it's actually a very interesting study in articulation, your ability to get a message across, and also the power of social media. Well, she took to Instagram, and she, in her jammies, I think she was even wearing UGG boots. I don't know, UGG boots still a thing? Well, she could have been wearing them in her blanket, you know, all nice and cozy and approachable like, compared the migrant detention camps that are on the border between America and Mexico. She compared them to concentration camps, and she used the words never again, which anyone who has studied the Holocaust or is knowledgeable about the Holocaust or understands Jewish history, sorry, Gimple's just tweeted something that it really has me like giggling.
Gimple, behave. Honestly, you are.
Hashtag dear John. Right. And, from the safety there, she made this comparison. Well, as you can imagine, it caused an outcry on a number of levels. You know, there's the allusion or the comparison between Trump to Hitler, and a lot of people saying that, you know, this is not a phenomenon that's new to this particular administration. This happened during the Obama administration as well. Okay, so that's one element of the story. The other element of the story is making the comparison to concentration camps. Now, while I don't like to see anybody in a detention camp of any kind, you can't make a comparison when people were rounded up, where people were starved, worked to death, diseased, often tortured, and eventually gassed and burnt. There is no way on earth you can make that comparison. It also negates and it cheapens the suffering of Holocaust survivors. It shows not only her complete and utter ignorance, and I wouldn't call her an anti-Semite. I think before we run there, I think we need to look at things, you know, a little bit more smartly. I wouldn't call her an anti-Semite, but I would call her extremely ignorant and using something that's very emotive and very, very powerful to push forward her own political agenda. Or yeah, to explain yeah. political but, opinion.
And again, what's interesting here is the same theme that we saw with John Cusack, it's the same theme that we saw with Zinzi Mandela, is that the inability to say, you know what, you're right. I didn't think of it in those terms, and I've learned something. But they can't. She doubled down. She doubles down on it. She fights back. She's it's the same thing with John Cusack. He tried to fight back, and then he didn't, and then he half. You know, just own it. And
that's what
it's just such an incredibly interesting theme that we can't seem to own our stuff.
You know, I'm sorry if I offended anybody. You know, I really didn't mean to. You know, I want to pose the question to John Cusack and anybody out there. If you are pro-Israel, why do you have to be anti-Palestinian? And the other way around, if you are pro-Palestinian, why do you have to be anti-Israel? Why can't you be pro both people having, you know, enjoying their rights and being pro-peace, the ability to accept each other and live together in peace? The same with Ocasio-Cortez. It's now got to the point where a Polish MP has actually visited her. He tweeted out a letter. I won't read the whole letter, but his name is Dominik Tarczynski. He's a member of parliament for Poland. He explains to her who he is, and I'll read you a little bit of his letter to her. He says, "I write you out of distress having learned of your recent statements regarding concentration camps. As you should be aware, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, a Nazi party who led Germany, were responsible for the darkest period in my country's and our whole continent's history by devising a chain of concentration camps in order to exterminate those who they believed were subhuman or a threat to the imperialistic machinations. This included both Jewish Poles and non-Jewish Poles, which resulted in the loss of 6 million of our citizens." Now, guys out there, he's talking from a Polish perspective. Mm-hmm. He says, "While under German Nazi occupation, a number of concentration camps were set up in my country, Poland. It has caused a deep wound that persists on our proud Polish and European history, and we must all deal with every single day. And we reaffirm to one another can never be forgotten and never allowed to happen again." This is why, and this is the very important sentence, this is why when someone cheapens the history or uses it for political point scoring, we become agitated and upset. So, you know, it also shows that, you know, she may be young and she may be a rookie and she may be, while inarticulate in some areas, she understands her audience and who she's talking to. She needs to also learn to listen, as well as people like John Cusack. When you've got a Polish MP, when you've got Yad Vashem tweeting at you and telling you that what you have said is wrong, don't you think that they may have a point?
Well, what's interesting again is there's As a male, I'm often told that I can't ever fully understand the levels of misogyny. And as a white person, I truly believe that I can never really understand what black people in South Africa went through. I can try, and I can empathize, and I can really do my best, but I can never really get it to that extent. But yet when somehow, when it comes to things like anti-Semitism, it's the only type of prejudice that the very people that are being prejudiced or suffering the prejudice are not the ones that get to decide. Everybody else can decide what is or isn't. If you took her situation, her comments about anybody else, they would say, excuse me, you know, who are you to tell us what is, I don't know, anti-Islam rhetoric if you're not Muslim? You know, how do you understand it? You don't. But yet when it comes to anti-Semitism, everybody feels free to lecture Jews on what is or isn't anti-Semitic. It's quite an incredible thing.
Absolutely. And the knee-jerk reaction when you say, listen here, you're crossing a line. Well, criticism of Israel is not anti-Semitic. They don't seem to understand that criticism of Israel is totally legitimate. And I mean, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's the national sport of the country here. It really is. You know, we live in a robust democracy that allows for it, even political cartoons, people. However, when it comes to issues of anti-Semitism, we are gaslit.
Yeah.
We are made to feel that we are being ridiculous, that there's something wrong with us, or that we're hypersensitive. We are telling you there is a problem. Robert Kraft last night, who just received the Genesis Prize, has given or donated $20 million to fighting anti-Semitism. We have a problem when countries around the world are starting to have special envoys or special ministers in government to combat anti-Semitism. When a 70-something-year-old woman walks out of a synagogue and is hit in the head with an iron ball, we have a problem.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's quite unbelievable. But sometimes I feel like it's sort of using a bucket against a tsunami. We've got to keep doing it, but it becomes a little tiring. We don't have a lot of time, and I did want to discuss this the situation in Israel with regard to this allegation of rape of the 7-year-old. Can you just give us a very quick overview as to your thoughts on this?
Okay, so this is a very, very complicated and obviously very, very sensitive case, and there are so many holes in the story, and I'm of the opinion that the suspect perhaps has not done it. I think it was a rash judgment. I think there was it's a rape that took part in a very, very secretive community, and the details of the connection between the alleged victim and the rapist are somewhat nebulous. The description of how this child was moved are very strange. And also what is of huge concern to many of us is that it was only reported 2 weeks after the fact, which means there was no rape kit done. If there was a rape kit done, it's obviously being bungled, and there seems to be a lack of concrete evidence, and this is perhaps symptomatic of a larger society problem that we have here.
Do we know for sure that there was a sexual assault? I mean, they should be able to determine on a 7-year-old, very sadly, even 2 weeks later.
Well, they're saying there's too much of a lack of evidence.
But that in of itself is, I mean, you know, obviously I don't want to go into the graphic details of it, but you should be able to tell if a 7-year-old has been raped even a few weeks later, surely.
Absolutely. And the police are saying that, you know, in fact, one law enforcement officer said that this case is like Swiss cheese.
Right.
I think it needs a lot of self-examination.